Correctly with the correct amount.
D20 Radio, your gamer's role.
www.d20radio.com.
You burst through the door, you find a small room filled with gold and jewels, and a red dragon. He starts to breathe. Save or die!
Welcome to the Save or Die Podcast, a podcast about classic Dungeons & Dragons. If it's in a box, we'll talk about it.
Welcome back to the Save or Die Podcast, adventure number 15. I am Vince, one of your hosts, along with DM Glenn.
Glenn. Yippee!
He's back, one of the core two.
Yippee!
And ever so silently, coming back for round two, is now dubbed DM Julie.
Hi!
This is 2 weeks in a row for you, Julie. Wow.
Woo! But this is like my third time, because I was on before, wasn't it? No, wait.
Yeah.
I can't even count.
Well, look, you're part of the B team now, so we're going to have to get you one of those electronic collars we all wear.
Yes.
If we go way off topic, Vince hits the button. And, yeah, what were you saying?
That's right.
Am I at least a giant bee?
Sure. You could be whatever. You could be the bee from The Simpsons if you want.
Yeah.
You can say
Bee Arthur?
Yeah, you could be Bee Arthur. I don't know if you want to be
John Belushi.
Bee Arthur is more my speed. Okay.
All right. So let's, we're figuring, well, let's just get right into this, the sweat of things. What am I saying?
It's either going to be really good or really lame. So let's go for good.
Yeah, let's go for good. And let's head directly into Game On this week. And this is the Game On segment, try number three for recording purposes, that everybody is not going to hear try one and two when Glenn and Julie both interrupted me. But, what, Glenn? You're very far in the back there.
I said you're going to be saying shut up a lot in this show, I think.
Probably. So, Julie, you came up with the topic this week.
Yes, and the topic is cooperation in and out of game, but of all things, what I was actually starting from when I first had the idea was the idea from a GM's point of view of cooperation between monsters.
Okay.
Because you can also have because everybody talks about cooperation among parties and trying to get your players to play nice and all that sort of thing, but a lot of times it is set up in a dungeon setting or something where the monsters are, if not cooperating, they've got some kind of a truce or they're synergistic in some way, like one eats stuff and the other one steals the treasure.
Right. Mm-hmm.
And the idea that this could, I mean, whether you're setting it up to be accidental, like, you know, groupers flocking around a shark who doesn't even notice them, or whether it's actually monsters who have decided, they're like, hey, you know what would be cool? If we had a giant centipede under the toilet. Yeah, that would be awesome.
Nice.
So, I mean, it just seemed like an interesting topic to address because it's way too easy to just take it for granted that you're going to be able to just pop monsters in like Legos into your scenario. And this way you have to give a little bit of thought to what actually is going on behind the scenes that makes them work well together.
Yeah.
Right.
Well, that was the whole point of classic D&D. Nothing ever made sense. And like Glenn pointed out last time with the module, how they had this whole formula, how monsters make sense one place, and then the rest of it is just like blah.
Yeah. Well, and that's part of the thing is actually if you set up a situation or an ongoing gaming situation where your monsters do make sense, then, you know, players can actually start to learn something about the ecology of them. It's like, oh, wait a minute. If there's a you know, fat monster here, there's going to be a wah monster over there, because they always, they almost always hang out together. Right. You know. Okay. So
and there's going to be those monsters that nobody gets along with. No other monster will cooperate just because of their nature.
Yeah.
I'm sure the Boulet has no friends.
you just love those things, don't you?
I do. I do. Just land sharks, just like, wow.
Candy Graham.
Yeah, pretty much.
Candy Graham. So you're just full of Boulet.
And centipedes anyway, so.
So yeah, there are things. Well, and also, you know, you're more likely to find cooperation among creatures with some amount of intelligence, because they're able to make a deal. Or you can, or there could be the, like I said, the grouper situation where, because all the things are of animal intelligence, it just happens to work out that way. But, you know, it's like if you happen to be around where there's badgers, there's bound to be bears or something like that.
True.
So I find the idea of being able to set up, you know, intelligent monsters so that they actually, you know, can make deals amongst themselves and stuff is like, oh yeah, the wizard up on the hill doesn't take any of us as long as we give him some juicy adventurers every couple of weeks to do his experiments on. Oh wait, did I say experiments? I wasn't supposed to talk about that.
Nice.
And but you can use it then, because in that sort of situation, the players can role play. I mean, you can actually gain. They would know, the creatures will know about each other, and you can use that, or you know, you can abuse it, frankly, because that's what adventurers do. But I like thinking about stuff like that. Well, right now, writing what I'm writing, my brain has been way too much on trying to make a nonsensical dungeon make sense.
And of course, like the higher up the intelligence ladder you go on a monster, the more complicated that relationship gets. Mm-hmm. Which is like maybe near the top is the high priest
lawyer.
That too. Or vampire lord or lich that has like goblins and orcs working for him.
Yeah, you know, and what does he pay him, or does he rule them with fear, or does, you know, are they controlled, or, I mean, because it's frankly, you know, there's a lot of drain to control a bunch of monsters. Why not just pay them or threaten their children, you know?
He pays them with love and hugs.
Oh, I'm sure.
Yeah.
This is a touchy-feely dungeon.
That's right. So cooperation.
I think that's a different podcast entirely.
That's the Love and Hugs PETA podcast.
Care Bears, the role-playing game. Yeah.
There actually, I think there was a role-playing game for Care Bears at one point in the 80s.
There was a role-playing game for just about everything at some point in the 80s.
I was in shock playing it.
Yeah.
Well, Glenn, you like bears. What's wrong with Care Bears?
Ugh.
Anyway, so cooperation with the monsters. How about cooperation with the players now? I should say characters first, and then the players.
Yeah, that's a different. There's two different categories there.
Yeah.
Well, and that's another thing that again we tend to deal with without necessarily considering whether it makes any sense, because a lot of times it's like, okay, everybody make a character, and you got Bob made a paladin, and Fred made an assassin. Right. Okay. Why are they working together?
It can work in certain situations.
Right.
Well, but there's only so many times that you can put those collars on everybody and tell them that if they don't go into the dungeon of the lich, their heads are going to explode.
Yeah.
They get sick of that real fast.
Yeah.
And don't forget, there was always, and I know first edition played off on this a lot, and a lot of people don't bother playing it, but there was also racial hatred for other races.
Yes, I mean, and it's there's only so many characters that can pop up going, you know, I grew up around elves. Elves are cool. Yeah. Or I love those dwarves. They got great rhythm.
But you get like the dwarves hate the elves, and the elves hate the dwarves, and the goblins hate the other monsters, and everybody hates half-orcs.
Yeah. Yep.
Yeah.
Well, because, you know, I mean, I hate to say it, but anytime you look at a half-orc, you just get those pictures in your head.
what the conception was like.
Yeah. It's like, mother. Oh. Yeah. So it's just, it's one of those things where, half-orcs are hated not so much for the orkiness, but for the creepiness.
Well, they are not also the best aligned creatures. I mean, they tend to veer off towards neutrality and evil.
Well, it's because nobody will hang out with them.
Oh,
yeah,
man.
They're isolated.
If they got enough hugs, they would...
Julie, you want, should we start an encounter group for them, right? So what was your family like?
That'd be a really interesting.
So what type of scenario would actually pit players to actually role play out the cooperation?
Well, it's really truly you should be doing something with that for many situations. It's like I even things that they mocked in The Gamers, where it's like, okay, are you familiar with The Gamers?
Oh yeah.
Multiple okay, movies, I kind of figured you would be, but I'm just going to point this out for anyone out there who hasn't watched it. You're missing something. No, but the other thing I'm going to point out for people who haven't watched it is there's a guy plays a mage. The mage character is killed. Not going to go into detail. That's a spoiler. But when he shows up with a new mage, which is basically, and the movie is cutting back and forth between the players and their characters. He shows up in the new mage, which is basically him with his cloak turned inside out.
Yes, yes.
Because he basically made exactly the same character all over again. The GM says, okay, play out this encounter. And their version of playing it out is, you look trustworthy, why don't you join our group?
Yes.
And he falls right back into his same place in marching order.
Yes.
And that sort of thing is exactly where, you know, I mean, it's one thing to be cooperative. It's another thing to be, you know, absolutely just assuming that because it's a player character, it's going to be the good guy. It's going to be on your side or whatever. And so, I mean, it's all very easy for a GM to just say, okay, you guys have to make a group who are going to work together. I mean, because that is actually not a bad thing to specify
Well, you know what? As far as like, you know, if the GM said, okay, you guys got to make a group that work together. The first thing the players think of is, okay, you're a thief. You can pick locks. You're a fighter. You can be in front. You're the magic user. You stay behind and throw a spell, blah, blah. They're thinking that way. They're not thinking alignment or personalities.
No, yeah.
Where's a lot of the problem comes from sometimes.
Right.
You know, I'm playing a thief, but he's also an assassin. So, you know, that kind of thing.
Well, you don't want a cookie-cutter character anyway, so.
Well, no. I'm saying but players don't think that way. Most of
my players always did. But but the thing is that you know, if you... There are times when people will go out of their way to create characters who are going to be irritating or ornery or, you know, whatever. And they're not doing it because they're good role players. More often they're doing it because they're
shit
annoying.
Disturbers. Yeah.
Yeah. And that's the thing is, it's like, okay, so your character has a compulsion to, you're a kleptomaniac. Why on earth is anyone going to let you in their party?
Yeah.
You know, are these people who've worked with you before? Why haven't they killed you already? and that's part of what it comes down to is everybody wants to play something interesting.
Yeah.
But interesting, as often as not, equals irritating.
Well, unfortunately, when done right, it's good role playing.
Well,
that's the rub.
It is, but unfortunately, most of the people who would do it are not good role players. But, I mean, because there are people who seem to deliberately choose irritating create irritating characters just to be irritating. They don't create them because they've got a backstory. They don't create them because they feel like they really want to try what it's like to play evil. You know, I mean, in a LARP I played recently, I was playing a character who's essentially a drow. You've seen my picture.
Right.
I walked into a bar, and this is a LARP, walked into the bar, and I was giving orders. I'm like, you over there, give me this, you know, do this. And the minute I walked in, everybody in the bar like put their hand to their face and went,
pinched up.
It was great. But they afterwards people were like, well, you weren't being evil enough. And I looked at them, I'm like, I was alone. Hello? Yeah. I'm in an entire bar full of people and I was alone. Mm-hmm. Evil does not mean stupid. What did you expect me to do? Start spell casting on everyone?
Chaotic stupid, yeah.
Yeah. Though the best encounter with that character was when you know, you're talking about racial hatred in that particular game world, the Androni, the drows, are particularly hated by the gypsies, and a gypsy fighter guy slammed me up against the wall in the bar and starts screaming in my face. Just, oh, you slavers, blah, 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 you know. And I'm just sitting there taking it, and all the people around are like, ooh. I'm like, you don't even know me. And he's like, blah, 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 blah. Slaver, slaver, because the Andronis are notorious slavers. I'm like, I haven't had a slave in weeks. Maybe I should check my pocket. Maybe I forgot one. and that, not giving him any good excuse to do any damage, was so much more damaging to his ego than if I fought him.
It was
brilliant. It was so much fun. But, you know,
see,
it was just
good
that,
role playing.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, it was great. But that's the thing, is that, you know, it's also has to take into consideration, I mean, when you're dealing with a group situation, there are reasons that, say, an evil character could work with, say, a paladin or something, but they would have to work out their differences. They would have to come to an agreement. Okay, we're all trapped on a desert island. Okay, that's a good reason to work together, no matter what, because it's survival for everyone or not. Mm-hmm. You know, we all have, you know, all of our loved ones have been captured and taken away by the dragon who's going to sacrifice him on midnight in 3 weeks from now.
Gotcha.
Okay, that's a good reason to work together.
Yeah.
You know, but you're still going to have difficulties. I mean, it's something that you come across in movies all the time, is the disparate group of people thrown together by circumstance and having to fight the giant wasps.
Yeah.
Sorry, I was on Sci-Fi Channel all morning.
were you watching The Mist or something?
No, actually, you know, The Mist does it pretty well, but no, I saw actually a pretty decent Sci-Fi Channel giant bug movie. I was really surprised.
Well,
apparently it wasn't.
What, Glenn?
Oh, I was just going to say, as far as party cooperation that way, you know, disparate group got to pull together. It just, because it's a role-playing game, it don't always wash, at least for players. There's always going to be one guy in there going, I don't care if we have to defeat this guy, I'm just going to cause crap.
Yeah, the guy with the quirk that has to stir the pot in the group.
Exactly.
I hate that.
My very first D&D game, I remember it to this day. I was playing a magic user, and my friend's wife was playing. They'd played for a while. They taught us how to play the game, and she played some kind of mage were tiger hybrid that he lets her because it's his wife, blah, 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 blah. And we were supposed to work together to go to this. We never made it to the dungeon because she was a thief, and she killed us all at night and took our stuff, and that was the end of the adventure. I think it lasted maybe an hour and a half. Maybe.
Wow, how much fun that must have been.
Oh yeah. I don't buy strong character by saying, well, maybe it's still a good game.
Well, okay. I could top that, but not in a Dungeons & Dragons type game. We were supposed to be playing a modern-day investigation game, and our GM was not in a good mood. But we pushed her to play anyway. One of the few situations where I was not the GM, because I'm usually the GM. And she decided, now it's worse when the GM decides to do this. She decided to make us roll for every skill check. So we start off, we get in a helicopter, we're heading out to the site. Helicopter skill check, critical fumble, we crashed and died. 20 minutes. It's like, yeah, okay, we won't do that again.
Now that's DM cooperation.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, if the DM doesn't want to be there, that is actually the fastest way to destroy a game.
Yeah, game over, bye.
Yeah, but back to players, though. The problem is, with a lot of the ornery type of players, is that they think they're being funny, they think it's going to be entertaining, something, and they don't always realize how much they're irritating everyone else.
Well, you know what? And then there's those players who don't care if it's funny or irritating, as long as it's bugging other people.
Well, sometimes you actually have to sit them down and tell them, you know. And this is something I've had to do a couple times.
Dude, you're being an asshole. Stop it. You know.
Well, yeah, it's like, hey, do you realize that no one else wants to play with you anymore? Why? It's just a joke.
Yeah, it's role playing. I'm just role playing.
It's my character. It's the way my character would behave. But the way their characters would behave would be to kill yours.
Yeah, some people can't distinguish the difference between role playing and just annoying other people in the group. So
exactly.
Yeah, exactly.
I've seen parties where the paladin wants to kill him, and he would.
Mm-hmm.
Oh yeah.
Yeah. I mean, especially somebody who's trying to play their character properly and comes to you and says, hey, my character really would kill that character, and I'm only avoiding doing it because they're a player character. Yeah. What should I do? You know, and that's when you're like, go to mediation. Where's Judge Judy? No.
that would be a good podcast. Role playing court.
I could actually see it. It's like, which one of us is right? The were-tiger who backstabbed the entire party, or everyone else?
Or Ronald McDonald. No, I don't know.
Well, part of what we've seen throughout gaming, I mean, throughout all of gaming is that there are games where, I mean, and there are different styles of gamers and different styles of GMs. And there's like games where the players are all out for themselves. There are games that are 100% group advancement. And of course, there are the GM versus player games, which, you know, just, well, for a one-shot or something like Tomb of Horrors, you can't avoid it. But when you're doing anything that's ongoing, you know, GM versus players gets really old really fast.
Yeah.
I remember going to DungeonCon about 15 years ago, and I was one of the DMs, and they had a DM meeting before the Friday night before.
Yeah.
And one of the things they said was, I know people have different styles of play and role-playing games, but please try not to kill off the characters right away. We have people here who pay good money to go into these events, and young kids who don't understand, and you know, they come to us, he killed my character in the first 10 minutes. So please don't do that. And I raised my hand and says, yeah, and I was playing Tune. That's a killer DM.
Yeah.
Well, see, there's some games where it's the way it's set up, but yeah, it's so frustrating when the GM is sitting there just cribbing everything out of Grimtooth's traps and expecting you to die in 10 seconds. You're like, but the point was to play all afternoon. What are we doing for the rest of the day?
Yeah.
Back to characters again. Uh-huh. I mean, the most notorious ones that are troublemakers in a party is the quote thief or assassin character, depending, because I mean, assassins a lot of times are like, I'm gonna backstab somebody. You're like, you get paid to backstab people. Why are you backstabbing for free? I'm keeping in practice. Well, yeah, but think ahead. You've got six people here. Even in their sleep, if you stab one of them, when they wake up, who are they going to blame?
Yeah.
The wizard.
Unless you stab all of them.
Yes, definitely.
In which case, who are the players going to beat the crap out of? And okay. What does it get you? See, that's the other thing that drives me crazy with certain classes of characters, is they want to do it because they can do it, not because they're doing it for a reason.
That's the kind of role-playing mindset I never understood.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, shoot, yeah. I got a pickpocket skill on my card. I got to use a pickpocketing on you. Yeah. What? Why?
Three times damage.
Because I feel like it.
Yeah. Three times damage, sneak up, and slit your throat. All right?
Yeah.
I don't have any money. Well, that's all right. You're stupid.
It's like, yeah, just because you can do it doesn't mean you should attack the darkness.
Oh, so on the last topic here, we have player cooperation now.
Mm-hmm.
So players can disagree about a bunch of things. So
it's players can be, I mean, finding the right mix of players and for your game and for each other is really, well, it's two different topics actually, but finding players who can get along is huge, and sometimes a DM intervention really does help. I mean, it sounds silly to take a player out, step aside, and say something like, look, the other guys are really not enjoying playing with you. Is there a reason you're doing this?
Yeah.
But it's not actually necessarily a bad idea.
Yeah.
If you've really got a group who really, really are not working together well, you know, sometimes you have to step aside and say to somebody, you know, I mean, point it out. Because, you know, I mean, we all started gaming probably at that age when we didn't know how to talk to others.
Yeah. And, believe it or not, this helped.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, it actually does, because you can do it as someone else. You can try out social situation things in a situation where it's not going to be taken seriously.
Hello, I am golf staff.
Yeah.
I know.
Are there any Cheetos? I'm sorry, now it's in my head. I can't get rid of it.
I played in a couple groups where there were players that were just like, well, I don't like playing with this person, and if he shows up, I'm not showing up.
Oh, God, yes.
Oh, Lord, we've all been through that at some point. But, you know, it all depends on how desperate you are to play. But
I had a champions campaign going on one time that was so big. It was like 25 people in the damn thing.
Wow.
I finally turned to my girlfriend and I said, we got to split this group.
Yeah.
We tried and it fell apart because, oh, I don't want to play with him. I want to play with him. I don't want to play with him. I want to play with him. I don't want to play with him. So it's like, fine, let's just go our separate ways then. Okay.
There are times when you have to do that, when a group does get a little big. But, well, like, I was in a group once where, out of the blue, one of the players, and this was a modern-day group, and it was a weird mix. I mean, you could be anything, literally. And out of the blue, this munchkin who had just recently joined our group goes, according to the stats, my character is the most attractive character here.
Ugh.
And my friend Robin looked at him and goes, it doesn't matter, your character's 8. No one wants to sleep with you.
Nice.
Anyway, were we talking about characters and cooperation here?
No, players and cooperation.
Players with cooperation. Okay, I thought you said
characters. And I actually had a game. We were actually playing one of the, it was like Mask of the Red Death thing. And this same munchkin fellow who didn't quite understand what we were playing, what kind of game we were playing. We were in an open gaming area for our group. We met at the club, and so we would let anybody at least try to play with us. Uh-huh. And he insisted on doing something that no one else in the group wanted to do. I mean, in this situation, he was going to go break into this building and see if there was something or other there. I don't know what it was. But everyone else refused to go with him. They thought it was a stupid idea. They really didn't want to. So while his character was away, and he was actually away, he had stepped out to go watch the Wargamers until we got back to him, you know, they figured out something else to do. And, you know, one of them turns to me and goes, should we go get him? I'm like, okay, here's the reasoning. Are you going to drive up to that building that he is breaking into and go outside because it's the middle of the night and yell, "Hey, stop breaking into that building. We found the end of the scenario."
Yes, why not?
I mean, logically, sure. Would you do that? And no. They're like, "No, we wouldn't. Good, we have an excuse to leave him out." I mean, because really, they were trying to. They were like, they didn't want to. You could tell, but they were trying to include him. And when I rationally pointed out to them that it made no sense to go get him, they were so relieved.
Yeah, I always hate that when you're in a group and there's that one player that does something that like everyone in the group is just like, why? And yeah. They go, and just because they want the spotlight on them.
I read in an old Dragon about some guy, they were playing I think they were playing Traveler or something, and they were in ship to ship, and this guy said, "Oh, there's the enemy ship. I'm going to ram him." "What? I got a bigger ship. I can ram him." "It doesn't work that way in space." He says, "Are you going to ram him?" "Yeah." And he rams him. They both blow up. "What happened?" "You blow up. You blow it up real good. That's what happens in space."
Yeah. Well, and there are times when even the best player has to be taken aside and reminded of what they're, you know, it's like, you know, it's there's no shame to a GM to say, to go to, you know, a player who pulls something like that and go, "Okay, look, your character is a ship's captain. You know that X, Y, and Z are the likely outcomes of that. Are you still going to do that?"
Yeah.
You know, or you just let them die because they're too irritating. I mean, that is actually an option.
Sometimes intelligence checks are not enough.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, but for cooperation, I mean, there, as I said, there is always the enforced cooperation of characters. You know, you all wake up chained in a dungeon. You know, you have to work together to escape. And by the end of the scenario, you hope that they have achieved enough respect for one another and their cultures that they've decided to work together later. Oh. Blah, blah, blah.
Blah, 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 yeah.
But, you know, you can't do the same thing to players. You can't put those neck bands on your players. It's against the law. And
it's in your own house. Who's going to tell?
I think you gave her a good idea. Look out.
Yeah, I know.
But that's one reason that is actually one of the reasons I switched from fantasy role-playing games with those kind of players, because I was in, you know, junior high school, to modern-day investigation horror games, because those, by nature, are group-oriented. Yeah, they're absolutely cooperation-oriented. We all work together, or we all die. Period.
I know, it's very interesting sometimes seeing these people who have been hardcore D&Ders play like Call of Cthulhu.
Yeah.
"Well, I'm going to go off and kill the monster." "No, let's go check it out. You know, let's go look at the house first. Maybe we find something on it." Okay.
Even worse is watching them. Even worse is watching them switch to vampire.
"I'm going to go kill the monster." "Okay, look in a mirror."
Yeah.
"You don't see anything, but that's you, and the best you're the monster."
The best is playing vampire, and they kill things, and like, "Okay, I loot the body." It's like, okay, you find $5. It's just...
And a condom.
A pack of gum.
"But he has 2 resource dots." "Okay.
You want..." They're not in his pockets. You want to... They're in his bank account.
Yeah, you find his plastic, and it's got like $10 in the bank. Okay.
Yeah, I want to steal his resource dot. Okay.
Yeah, you better learn how to hack, because that's how you're going to get at that.
All right, so let's end this segment here, and let's hear what people have to say about cooperation. I hear Julie wants to say something.
Oh, I was just going to say that. Okay, fine. I was just going to wrap it up, but I won't. You're laughing your head off.
I was laughing because Glenn was laughing. That's all.
Julia,
he's infectious.
I swear to God,
dude.
Everyone loves me. I am fabulous.
He said. Sounds like Julie's going to say something. No, but anyway, what I was going to say.
Save or Die podcast at gmail.com, saveordie.info. Check out the site. Give us a call, 570-290-7283, or save. And you can actually go to the site and ask Glenn a question on the Ask a Dungeon Master, a new feature up on the site. Or Crispy, that's correct. And we'll head into Random Encounters.
"We take what we want and leave the rest. Just like your salad bar.
Nothing up must leave. Presto!"
come out no more.
What? Huh? What'll come out no more?
Random Encounters.
So for Random Encounters this week, we have an infamous creature that a lot of people have used in the past. Glenn, we're going to go with you as usual to tell us what it is.
Bugbears. Where the hell did they come up with this thing?
I don't know.
I never heard of a bugbear before D&D.
No?
No. And I looked through all the books, and he's not in original. He's not in the white books or the brown books or whatever the heck they are.
The little brown book, yeah.
First time I see him is in Holmes.
Yeah, I have him in...
I'm sorry, go ahead.
I was going to say, I have him in the Mulvey book. I'm looking at him right now.
Oh, yeah. I mean, from Holmes on, it's in the book. And they are described in Holmes. Yeah, I should be doing Liz's voice here. In Holmes...
No, it's, hello, I'm Liz!
That's right. Hello, I'm Liz. Hello.
You're going to need some alum.
Yeah.
Go okay. ahead. Go ahead, Liz.
According to the Holmes, it's... they are... They do a hit dice 3+1 hit dice. That'll change. Chaotic evil. And the description is... That's a carrion crawler. No. These creatures are great hairy goblin giants. Despite their size and shambling gait, they move very quietly and attack without warning whenever they can. They surprise a party on a roll of 1 to 3 on a 6-sided die due to their stealth. Now, those characteristics stay with them through all the other versions.
Yeah, definitely.
Something that big can be that quiet. I don't know.
Yeah, I don't understand how they're bugbears, but they're just hairy goblins. Why don't you just call them fuzzy goblins or something? Or
yeah.
Well, now, goblin this bear. Is one of the... Okay.
Yes, Julie?
This is one of those things where... now, the bugbear was just a word. I mean, it's not something that's original to D&D. It's a legendary thing. It's like boogeyman. It was really generic. It was like... It was throughout... You know, history. I mean, it was in a play in 1565 called The Bugbear, in Italy. I looked it up on Wikipedia, but the thing is that it was one of those things. It was just something you scared children with. It wasn't something that you had a history for and all that sort of thing. And so when they just imported names of mythological creatures into the games, I suspect they're like bugbear. Is it a half bug, half bear? Does it have a bug's head or a bug's body? I mean, yeah. Can you imagine that brainstorming session?
Now you said it's to scare little children. Maybe that's the bug part of the bugbear.
But it could be just also something like the etymology of boogeyman. I mean, it could be a boogeyman, a buggy bear or something originally.
My mind is thinking something dirtier, but okay.
But why not just call it like a goblin bear? Why does that have to be a bugbear? It doesn't really make sense, the name at all. Yeah, other than the bear part. No. The bear part makes sense because it's hairy, but...
Yeah.
It's essentially a goblin with hair.
Yeah.
And bigger.
And bigger. lot bigger.
Now over in BX, it gets damaged 2-8 and +1 by
right.
weapon.
Right, right.
So as we go, he gets a little more damage.
Yeah, as you go up in the additions, he gets a little stronger.
Yeah, well, this, that, and the other thing. Metzer, it's about the same.
Yeah.
And, anyway, he goes from, like, chaotic to evil to chaotic good to chaotic evil. Well, it doesn't go chaotic good, but, I mean, you know, he bounces all over the place.
He's like a gummy
bear. And more of them show up, too. I'm looking at the rule cyclopedia, and all of a sudden, I'm preparing 2d8. Oh, my God.
If he bounces all over the place, does that make him a gummy bugbear?
Yeah, God, I knew you were going to say
yeah, that. Yeah, yeah, yeah. I think the reason why they started having more show up, because, I don't know, they maybe want to use more packs. They want to make him more more frightening. Because one is just like, yay, one.
I looked in the Dragon decks. Unfortunately, they never did the ecology of the bugbear, which is, I'm sorry they didn't, because I really wanted to find out, you know, this is
did
one
they
of
ever actually include a picture of a bugbear?
I've never seen. Maybe in second or third edition monster. I don't know, but I've never seen a picture of a bugbear.
Quick to the wiki. Know. Does it show anything?
Computer not functioning. I will have to look. Talk just amongst yourselves.
Yeah.
Looks so, like a hairy hobgoblin.
Yeah. It's, I think they might have been. They might have used one in first edition. I'm not sure, but.
Yeah.
But I'm definitely guaranteed it's probably going to be in second edition when they had that binder with all the monsters in it.
Oh.
Mm.
Oh, yeah. Picture.
So how can we use a bugbear properly?
How can, properly?
Yeah.
I'm going to shut up.
well, this is another one of those areas where you've got monsters that have societies, but you have no idea what their society is. I mean, they're always talking about, you know, goblins hunt in groups and have tribes or whatever, but you know, you never really see their society because you just kill them.
Yeah.
You know what? I could see using the bugbear, since he's a big, hairy creature in the wilderness, as like a plot for like a Bigfoot story, a monster that terrorizes a town or something.
And
is food or something.
That'd be great.
No, it's intelligence, though, isn't it?
Yeah.
I mean, it's not animal or anything.
Looking up here, I found him in 3.5. It never gave me a clue on the intelligence.
No, they really don't base things off intelligence in the basic. The DM discretion.
Oh, right. My bad.
It's kind of like a DM discretion on most of the stuff.
That's true.
Mm-hmm. Which I kind of like, because you could decide if that rust monster can go, "Hi, guys, I'm going to rust your armor." Or, you know.
Let you pass if you give me that knife. Hey, I'm hungry.
Yeah.
Now, I'm staring at the picture in the 3.5 monster manual, looking at him and thinking, you know, the way he looks like he'd be the big bad in a tribe of like goblins or hobgoblins or something like that. Like every so many goblins has one bugbear champion or something like that.
Yeah,
maybe he's the
leader.
Well, yeah, the next thing that he's the anyway, yeah.
Yeah.
I know I had something in mind, but I can't think of it.
The next big thing?
Yeah, there we go.
Although I was thinking he's the Homo sapiens to all the Neanderthals or something.
Could be.
He's the next level of evolution.
Bugbear.
Maybe you discover that if, you know, goblins live 100 years, they become a hobgoblin, and if they, you know, kiss the Blarney Stone, they turn into a bugbear.
So how would you use Julie, how would you use a bugbear in your campaign if you were making one up right now?
Well, as it stands, unfortunately, it's so generic. It's basically just one of those things you throw in as yet another experience monster for people to fight. I mean, it doesn't really strike much beyond that because that's how it's generally used. It's just like, oh, it's a bugbear. It's a blah, blah, X worth this much and probably going to be carrying that much coinage, you know. I would have to develop more about it and create more of a story before I could even start to use it.
Yeah, of course.
Unless it was just going to die.
Yeah.
You're just challenging me to use one in my new radio script, aren't you? No.
Yes, I am. And Glenn, how would you use it in your games?
Well, I'm staring at, once again, the wrong manual, the 3.5 monster manual. But it is giving me some ideas for original, because it says most bugbear leaders are fighters or fighter rogues. Now, a rogue bugbear sounds interesting, a.k.a. thief. I'm thinking of like a city adventure where he's like the leader of this thieves guild or some kind of... Because, like I said, they don't attribute intelligence to these things, so it's like, you know, the DM's discretion. You could make an intelligent bugbear who decides to become a criminal mastermind.
Going for that picnic basket!
Oh, shut up!
It's not Yogi the Bear now.
I drew a picture one time. I've got a picture in my file somewhere of Smokey the Bugbear. Only you with fireballs.
When you just said he was a thief and might be in the city, it was the first thing that popped into my head.
Hey, Boo Boo, let's go get that picnic basket.
See, a Boo Boo would just be a goblin.
Like that ranger over there. Yeah. There's a ranger over there.
I'll use my significant thieving skills to pick a pocket that picnic basket.
Oh God. No, but I mean, I could see like a town adventure where he's like the criminal mastermind or something like that, or he's the head. I keep thinking of, you know, like he's the head of the, I don't want to say the mafia or something like that, but or he could be an enforcer for them too.
The problem that you come across, even calling it a bugbear, though, is that most experienced players take it for granted that that is an XYZ low-level monster, blah, 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 you know, and it's just, it's very difficult when you're dealing with that sort of thing to create any kind of interest in it.
There is no reason he has to be such a low-level monster.
Oh, no, it's just, that's where the unfortunate coexistence of player knowledge and game's seriousness is very difficult.
Well, that's why you do, like I said, you make him mysterious and make him that monster that hides in the woods and attacks the village at night and beef up his stats.
What was that film with Alec Baldwin and Anthony Hopkins where they were in the woods and they were facing like this bear who was really smart?
Deliverance?
No. Julie. I forget what it was, but it's like this bear could, like, you know, they put out traps and it'd circumvent the traps and all this other stuff. I could see a bugbear doing that.
I don't know. I've never heard of this movie.
Yeah.
I know, because Nicolas Cage was, like, Anthony Hopkins' wife's boyfriend, blah, blah, blah.
Yeah. Yeah, but like I said, that's fodder for it right there.
Mm-hmm.
So what we got? Criminal mastermind, mysterious creature in the woods. What else can we use? Let's put him in the ocean and make mermaid bugbears. I don't know.
All right, you're getting a little wacky now with this. Mermaid.
That would be ugly.
Yeah.
Finding a bullet. Yeah, okay.
You want a bugbear teaming up, riding a bullet?
Yeah, that would be scary. Anyway.
He's a bugbear wrangler.
Yeah. Or,
where's my drums and cymbals here? Come on.
Yeah, I need a rim shot. there's at least two good ideas, which is two more than I thought I could come up with.
Yeah.
In general, though, he would be a fairly low level sort of thing. I mean, going strictly by the numbers.
Well, like the hired muscle or something.
Yeah, well, I mean, he doesn't necessarily have to be, but that's where people are going to expect him to fall. You know, why not have a, you know, the people, I could see a scenario where the players come into town, especially one where you have know-it-all players, where the players come into town and people are like, oh, it's a bugbear haunting us. And they're like, ah, bugbear. Okay, we'll send Bob after it. Bob, go get it. Bob comes back with his butt in his hand. Ah, it had to be my butt.
It's an undead bugbear.
You are a bugbear lich. I mean, something where you can really, really catch them off guard because they take for granted that they know something that they shouldn't. And or just a bugbear who happened to have, you know, came across a party of adventurers who had fallen off a cliff and died, and he just picked up every one of their magic items and wears them all.
Ooh, that's totally.
And so it's got you know extra strength, extra power, extra this, extra that.
It would be funny that he doesn't have the intelligence to realize what he has.
And yeah,
it's giving him pluses, and you know, it's like. And he picks up the, ooh, look at the stick. Boom! You know, there's a fireball at them.
Yeah, I mean, and that would be actually pretty entertaining because he also would have no compunction to use what he's got because he doesn't understand charges and stuff. And right. So therefore, you know, he'll just keep using it till it runs out. And they're like, oh, well, that was, you know, you could have saved a few charges for us since we were stealing it off you. Well, guess not. And that way you wouldn't have all these magic items falling into players' hands. Oh, it'd be hilarious if you give him something really weird like, you know, many things. And I was thinking the Wand of Wonders. And so weird stuff keeps happening. They're like, oh, it's a Wand of Wonders. I can't wait to get that off him. And by the time they get it, all the charges are gone. It's like, ooh.
Yeah, he's randomly running around the forest shooting things off.
Yeah.
We were this close. Yeah, wow. Or they get it and it's got one charge left, and they poof, and out comes the horde of butterflies.
See, I want to play more intelligent than that. My stupid creatures in my game are gnolls. So I would like to put him like at least two rungs up the intelligence ladder from them.
Gnolls?
The gnolls, yeah.
Gnolls.
Gnolls.
Okay.
Gnolls. It's like saying gnu.
Gnu.
So it's like he's more intelligent, but not quite. Just yeah. enough to, you know, just enough to get himself into trouble.
Hey, let's get that picnic basket.
Yeah, there we go. Only you prevent fireballs.
Oh, yeah. Lord, I've started something, haven't I?
Thank you very much.
So we challenge you, Julie, in your radio scripts to start adding a bugbear in with some personality.
And folks, how would you use a bugbear in your game?
Well, Glenn, you faded away.
I said, folks, how would you use a bugbear in your game? Let us know.
Yeah, let us know. SaveOrDiePodcast@gmail.com or 570-290-7283-SAVE. And let's head into our last segment of the night.
Your dungeon master has placed you in a dreadfully precarious position.
Where are the Cheetos?
They're right next to you.
Well, all you do is we play the characters we talked about earlier when we run around and stuff.
I want to show you a trick Mother showed me when you weren't around.
Use your lightning bolt.
Victory is yours.
I'm attacking the darkness.
Dungeons and Dragons games. Products of your imagination.
You're not there. You're getting drunk.
Products of your imagination this week. We have a special module that Glenn himself handpicked for this adventure. And it comes in from, is it Beretta Games was his name? I can't.
Barataria. Barataria, I think I looked at the name
out there. And it's Adventure Module AA-1-2, Adventures at the Rainbow Lodge. And this adventure is specifically designed for young players with level 1 to 2 characters. And when he means young players, he means like 8 to 12.
Kids.
Or, yeah, kids.
Yeah. You remember kids are at their most impressionable at that age, and if this is their first experience at D&D, you want to make it a good one.
Okay, so let's do first impressions of this module. Just by looking at first impressions, I'll start with you, Julie.
I swear it reminds me of something I read before, but it's. You mean first impressions? Just well, okay. Basically, I found it
without descriptive details. You found out what? I'm sorry.
Very, very basic and kind of dull.
Okay, good.
And sorry.
That's fine. You're being honest. Glenn, what did you think? First impressions real quick.
I will not argue with you on that point. It is a little dull, but I think that's one of its strengths because it really gives the DM latitude to do. It makes it a bigger sandbox. It gives you two little adventures to send them on. And then it basically describes the area.
Right.
And that's it. And the NPCs that are there. And the NPCs don't even have names, which I thought was funny. Like the innkeeper, the lieutenant. And which I thought, well, that's, again, you know, name them whatever you want.
And Bob, it's Bob, and Bob.
Bob, this... Bob, and Bob. Yeah, okay. Bob the innkeeper, Bob the lieutenant, Bob the schemer. Okay.
It's a very small community, and they're all inbred.
My name is Earl. Yes. It's my brother Daryl. My other brother Daryl.
Yeah.
And no, when I first looked at this, I'm just like, well, okay, cool. It looks like one of the old style modules, the way it was. The front page is all set up. But then that picture of them walking over the bridge with the rainbow, it's just like, ugh.
It's a little Care Bear, yeah.
Yeah. I mean, the picture's really drawn really well. I mean...
Oh, yeah. No, that's a Bradley K. McDevitt picture. Mm-hmm. He did covers for my magazine way back when. He's really sweet.
Mm. Great drawing. I'm impressed by it, but the rainbow, he should maybe have taken the rainbow out.
Well, they called it Rainbow Lodge for a reason, presumably. So, I mean, I think that was part of the specs for the artwork.
But I can tell he was really gearing it to make the first, if this is their first encounter with D&D, something easy, something simple, and something memorable. As far as the adventures go, as far as the setting goes,
yeah,
little cameo there. As far as the setting goes, I think
Glenn, get closer to the mic.
I think Glenn needs to get closer. No, I think that it's a great area to base your adventures in. I like the lodge. It just gives me that kind of like, it feels like a lodge, like, you know, oak and wood and, you know, that the musty, not musty smell, but that woodsy smell. I just got a lot of feeling off of this one as far as like atmosphere.
That's good for something like you know, between things, but making it an adventure. I mean, I see the point. I do of having something simple for beginning players, particularly smaller, younger beginning players. But at the same time, even by the time I was a beginning player, I would have wanted something more exciting than this.
Uh-huh.
Why is it like all these rooms in the inn just scripted out when there's no need for it?
Well, they assume that you're going to go break in everybody else's room. No.
That's the part I was reading it, and I'm just like, okay, what's the point of this description? What's the point of this description?
Think part of that is they are trying to make it feel more real, like Glenn said, more like a real place. And that's not a bad thing. It's just, you know, it feels more like, it doesn't feel like an adventure per se, though. I mean, the adventures they have in there are good first beginning adventures. I mean, it's just, the problem is, if you're going into fantasy role-playing, you want something a lot more exciting most of the time. Most people come into it going, I want Lord of the Rings, I want to go fight things, I get to rescue horses.
Yay.
What? Yeah, it's just, it's not as thrilling as, because people want, I want a little adventure in my fantasy adventure.
Yeah, I guess maybe I was looking at it with the wrong set of eyes. See, I was trying to imagine.
No, I think you're actually looking at it with the right set of eyes. It's just that, you know, most people aren't going to be. And that's the problem, is that most people, if they're playing already, and they're picking up adventures and stuff, they're going to be further ahead, and this would be something that at best would be a stopping point between real, quote, real games, unquote.
Right, right. And there's a lot of things you can do in the area to make it that way. It kind of, mm-hmm. what it reminds me of is kind of a role-playing version of The Princess Bride. Now, I'm not saying the story of The Princess Bride, the backstory of The Princess Bride, where he talks about how his grandfather used to tell him this, read him this book, and he made it absolutely gripping, exciting, and wonderful. But then later on, when he was an adult, he got the book, and it was dull as dishwater. He didn't realize his grandfather was interpolating everything in that book.
Yeah.
And cutting out all the boring parts.
Yeah, making it exciting and memorable. And that's the way I feel this module is. Okay, yeah, it's kind of, you know, vanilla.
But, well, yeah, a good GM can turn anything into a good scenario.
Right, right. But I think that was the mindset in the whole thing.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, fine. We're just going to give you this. You know, do it.
Yeah, I guess.
Yeah. I mean, like I said, I don't think it's a bad thing. It's just that particularly with the bombardment of the media, most people think of fantasy as being so much more exotic than that, that simple things are going to be bland. And it's again, you know, I'm not saying there's something wrong with the scenario. It's probably just something wrong with us, but, but it's just like, you know, if you have a vampire novel these days, it better have 72 vampires and vampire culture and all right. of vampire background stuff instead of just like a vampire
yeah.
who does like a vampire-y thing.
And he has to be like hot and have the best car and have good hair and
sparkle and yeah. all that nonsense.
So
yeah, and that's the thing is things have been taken up a notch already too many times to go back. Very conveniently.
So you're saying that 8 to 12 year olds are a little more jaded, too jaded for this kind of thing.
I mean, they play,
oh, please, yeah.
Please. The kids are playing Call of Duty now, so who cares?
Well, you know, it's funny because, you know, there used to be an argument made. No, that's a digression. Sorry.
No.
Because you were saying, well, you were saying.
What's the argument?
The oddly enough, I work in law, so I mean, in legal stuff. So many years ago, there was actually an argument made that children can't tell the difference between one thing and another. I mean, if they're similar, like, you know, Ronald McDonald and any other clown. Nowadays, you know, children are, I mean, that was made in a court of law and actually won a court case between Croft and McDonald's. But nowadays it's like, God forbid you give a child a knockoff iPod, they will be able to tell you what exactly is wrong with it. I mean, and we're talking small children. They know their characters. They know their things. They're totally frighteningly hyper aware of things.
I'll give you that. If I, you know, for Christmas here, I get an exact, I mean, you know, and God knows I was this way too. They tell you exactly which action figure they want.
Mm-hmm. Or, and not the one with the white, the one with the silver.
Mm-hmm. Or a Wii game. You know, don't get the deluxe one. I don't want this one. You know, that kind of thing.
I knew that as a kid when I was growing up and with
That's
toys.
What I said. God knows I did it too.
Yeah.
But still, I don't know. I just have too much faith in childhood, I guess.
Mm-hmm. You do. You're a grandpa.
Yeah, I was reading through this, and all I could think of was, what can I? How can I get Gage into this? How can I? And it's just like I just saw all this. Oh yeah, he'd love this. He'd love this. He'd love this.
If I was going to get my kids into it, if I had a whole bunch of kids that wanted to play it for the first time, I think I'd make something a little more exciting, a little more tailored to them. Not this. This is too cookie cutter. Yay! Let's go on an adventure.
Yeah,
thing.
It kind of feels like a Rainbow Bright scenario.
All right, I'll give you that. I just think you could take it and make it.
Seriously, the cartoons that kids watch on Saturday mornings are more exciting than most of the stuff in this module.
Okay.
Yeah.
I just thought you could take it and dirty it up a bit. You know.
Oh, yeah, you might be able to. Yeah, definitely.
Yeah. I mean, again, I don't think there's anything wrong with the scenario or with your perception of it. I think there's something wrong with people today.
Yeah.
Take the rock.
Like, this module definitely is... I like the guy that writes this, Barrietto, whatever his name is. I'm sorry for pronouncing wrong, but I like his modules. I've read most of his modules, and he does a great job writing the modules. This one just, I don't know, didn't do it for me. I'm sorry. And I think we're going to go right into Raiding the Dragons here. So, Glenn? Who is no
four
longer... Is
and
no
a
longer...
Half.
Four and a half.
I'm only doing four and a half. I'm only doing the half because I'm going to concede on some of your points.
So Glenn's giving it a four and a half. Julie, what are you going to give this out of Dragons? Five out of whatever.
Say 36. He loves that.
No, I'd give it. It's not bad by any means. I'd give it probably a three, and I can't see. I think if I bought it, you know, rather than just, you know, sitting down to read it for this purpose, if I bought it, I would be very, very disappointed.
Yeah.
But I can see that it definitely has uses, and it definitely has potential. But at the same time, if I'm going out of my way to buy something, I don't want potential. I want something I can use right now.
Yeah. If you're going to buy something, you want to be able to use it and not have to sit there and futz through it.
Yeah. I mean, I agree. I like the idea of a nice regional place that you can use, like, between games and stuff. But at the same time, you know, I don't want that to be the majority of the product that I pick up.
So you're giving it a three, right?
Yeah.
All right. I'm going to give it 2.5 because I really didn't like it as far as I thought it was boring. Too cookie cutter. I mean, I know it's supposed to be cookie cutter for the DM to... Like Julie said, if I'm going to pick this up, I'm going to want a thing laid out for me. All I have to do is read it and say, kids, here's your characters. This is how it starts. I don't want to have to sit through it and futz through it. So, and I didn't like the fact that there was too much descriptive texts in places that didn't need to have descriptive texts. So,
okay.
And as Glenn knows, I hate that. So,
yes. God knows he hates that.
Yes. So that's going to round off the module probably at a 3.5. Because Glenn rated a 4.5, Julie had a 3, and I had a 2.5. So I think that's going to be like around a 3-something.
I know the Russian judges are being bastards again.
Yeah.
Yeah, comrade.
So you can pick up this module by going to his website. Glenn, do you still have it open with the website address?
Barataria.com.
Okay.
And And I do like the idea of providing something for younger people. That is a really good idea. I mean, I certainly hold nothing wrong with that. It's just, like I said, yeah. I would be disappointed as a purchaser.
We could probably do one of his other modules in a later, in a later show. And, yeah.
Definitely. Okay. And let's head out for the week, because that'll end the show. We've gone over our allotted time, so...
Gee, I wonder why.
I don't know.
Me. No, always me.
Not Julie. Yeah. And Julie, why don't you give yourself a nice plug to tell people where to go to listen to your audio drama?
Oh, okay. I'm doing... My show is called 19 Nocturne Boulevard. It's an anthology series, fantasy, sci-fi, horror, whatever I felt like. I am actually working on writing a classic dungeon crawl scenario that'll start for a second series called The Trial of Myriad, which will be coming out sometime in the spring, probably.
And after that series ends, the module will be coming out 2 months later.
I suppose if there was demand, I don't know. That would be kind of entertaining.
Julie's going to turn out a module. Oh, boy.
Yes, Julie, it's about time you got your writing pen back and started publishing for Dungeons & Dragons again.
Oh, you betcha.
And for the final announcement before we head down the road of the broken tears is Glenn making weird noises, but other than that, Lumpers, 2011.
Yay.
Coming over to Save or Die.
Cool.
I do have, I'll give it to you, Vince. You can probably put it on the website. I did take all five episodes and put it into one narrative. So if you want to sit there and listen to all five of them strung together, you can do that too.
So what's it, about a half hour with all of them strung together?
44 minutes.
Ah, 44 minutes. That's not bad.
Yeah. With all the mumpers and, the stuff taken out.
Oh, cool. Send it to me and I'll put it up on the website so people can get caught up and listen. And then we'll start putting up season two as you start making them in the spring or whenever.
Okay. Julie's got...
Okay, put it up. Honey. Oh.
Liz, what are you doing here?
Hello, I'm Liz. This is my podcast. I'm going to talk like this week.
Hi, Mario.
Yes, I'm a Super Mario, so I'm going to talk like this.
Okay.
I am not the Pope.
There's a topic to address sometime, which is naming creatures and what names to avoid because they will cause way too many jokes.
Yeah.
Good topic for the next show.
Definitely. So let's.
How many people avoided demons in the 80s because of Rock Me Asmodeus?
Anyway. All right. So, good night, everybody. Save or die. Blah, 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 blah. You know the catchphrase.
Good night, everybody.
Bye.
If you have any comments, please email saveordiepodcast@gmail.com. Or visit Save or Die at saveordie.info. Follow the cast on Facebook / Save or Die Podcast, or follow them on Twitter @TheEvilDM.